Martin Fay is our next speaker, and he's the CEO of the Association of Superannuation Funds of Australia, ASFA. Martin joined ASFA at the end of last year, and prior to that was a managing consulting partner at KPMG, where he worked with clients across financial services and other sectors to drive transformational change. Welcome to the stage, Martin Fay.
Thank you very, very much. It's always a pleasure to speak at a peer body, and as a member of the Institute of Chartered Accountants, it's always nice to come to the Actuaries Conference. I'm going to run through this pretty quickly. It's late in the afternoon, but I am going to provoke you, and I will keep going until you stop me. So, let's start. Thinking differently about consumers and about customers. From my point of view, my customers are superannuants and retirees, and I think there are a number of things that I'd like you to think differently about as you participate in a sector and an industry that's desired to give them better outcomes. The first one is, for me, is the changing nature, the way in which we organize effort in our economy and our society. Shorthand for that is the changing nature of work, the gig economy. The bulk of what we do in terms of retirement, group insurance, insurance in general, presupposes the dominance of an occupation which is stable and enduring for most of our lives. That is increasingly not a reflection of the underlying empirical reality. Changing nature of roles every month, changing employer every 2 years, the rise of independent contracting, the so-called gig economy, you have built an industry, a proud profession, on the assumption of the occupation. Paid employment is a relatively recent phenomenon, starting in the late 1870s, a way of guaranteeing labor in Northern Europe, industrial mills. The reality is, by 2025, 30% of the effort in this economy will sit outside an employment relationship. Superannuation is an occupational pension which presupposes the existence of an employer-employee relationship. I need you to think about that. When you go out, and if you're in Sydney, and you see that Deliveroo driver or cyclist, it's really important that you don't run them down, because they haven't got any work cover, and they're not covered by their super. And that's got real implications for how you define risk, how you measure risk, and how you price risk. And I think that matters. My second thing is the nature of retirement. The nature of retirement is predicated in recent decades on the idea that it's a recreation activity to be consumed. Now, in the 1950s, that was fine. The association of retirement and recreation meant that you consumed public capital in the form of national parks and, you know, libraries, art galleries, etc. To consume recreation and a life of leisure from the age of 65 to 95 is not healthy, it's not financially feasible, and it's really bad for your relationship. In the absence of a reformation in retirement, you know, if you go back to the sort of pre-Reformation era, work was ungodly because it kept us from prayer. And one of the things the Protestant Reform Movement did was it redefined work as being godly and fulfilling. The problem is we still associate retirement with leisure. And that makes it really expensive, really unhealthy. And in an era with increasing longevity, we have a choice about being younger and healthier for longer or older and sicker for longer. My concern is, I think, that the continued obsession with a life of retirement that is dominated and defined by recreation shortchanges us. And what I'd say to you is we need to find a higher purpose for retirement, because this idea of it being a sort of a singular activity of leisure, I think increasingly it'll be about participating in the gig economy right into your 70s. I think it'll be about participating in volunteering activities, and there will be some leisure activities, but it will not be a homogenous recreational period. Sorry. The third thing I want to talk about is investment strategies. Many of you construct assets and investment portfolios for people. I think a big theme that's out there for consumers is what people are consuming. I'm fascinated by Mona in Hobart. I'm fascinated by the fact that a piece of aesthetic capital, which is privately owned, is the biggest form of economic stimulus in a relatively small economy. But it's not unique. Bilbao did it with the Guggenheim. Gustav Eiffel did it with the Eiffel Tower. It was a temporary structure he was going to take down afterwards. In an economy that's predominantly associated with the primary and the tertiary sector, I think we need to be mindful of the emergence of quaternary and quinary societies, where increasingly the consumption of an aesthetic experience defines valued assets. So the rise of tourism, the rise of the experiential, means that increasingly the asset classes that we will look to invest in will be experiential. You should have bought Cirque du Soleil. And so we have an economy, I think, that, you know, is well served by the primary sector. It's well served by the services sector, however low the value add. But I think the lesson for this is compare three economies. Compare the US economy, the Australian economy, and the French economy. How do you create $1,000 worth of value add? Well, in Australia, you fill 4 or 5 wagon loads of iron ore and you ship them to Japan and they send back Land Cruisers. If you're in the US, you send the recipe for an iPhone to Foxconn and they send you back an iPhone. You get $1,000 worth of value add. And if you're in France, you send the design for a pair of Christian Louboutin shoes and they send you back a beautiful pair of shoes. Two of those are knowledge economies based on the aesthetic. One of them's not. So I think as actuaries, we've got a big asset allocation problem. I want to turn now to the topic of thinking. Today I heard a lot about data. One of the things that concerns me as we think about consumers is that we continue to embrace an epistemological fallacy that data, when it's classified and organized, leads to information, and when you have information, it leads to knowledge and insight. That's not actually true. There's no empirical evidence to support that premise. The reality is what turns data into information and insight is actually wisdom. And so the idea that we're going to, use artificial intelligence or machine learning or any of these things to drive these big breakthroughs, and that we're going to take ourselves out of the loop, I think are naive. Okay, a data-driven strategy per se, the reality is the competitive advantage periods are short, the technology is observable and replicable, and in the long term, it gets eroded. We're underestimating the value of thinking, and in particular, the value of deep, hard, unafraid thinking. And so I think the challenge we have as we rush to embrace technology, there's a lot of evidence out there, particularly from people like Gordon, who suggest that the impact on long-term productivity since the 1970s has been rather negligible. And so I think we need to be very clear in the market for ideas, and as we think about consumers and we think differently about consumers, that we are not, I think, tempted to take the easy way out. I think we need to challenge ourselves. I think we need to think differently, but that does require unafraid, hard thinking and not to be lazy. And so my challenge to you today is, and I'll go back to something Jeff said, it's very easy to think about the social license. And it's a very appealing concept. The problem, I think, as a Burkean liberal, let's call myself that, and a European, is that, social license would have burnt Copernicus at the stake. I'm a fan of the rule of law, personally. I get CSR, I get ESG, I get all of that. As we embrace populism as a European, can we just be careful? So let's have some really unafraid hard thinking. Let's delight the customer. Let's maybe do more than nudge them, because I don't think we can nudge them to outstanding results. I think we need to be brave about what we do, but I think we need to embrace this and think about it. So my appeal to you is, as actuaries, the nature of work is changing, the nature of retirement needs to change. We need to think about asset classes differently and where the value in our economy is coming in the next 50 years. And we need to engage in unafraid hard thinking. But it's important as we do that, that we think deeply about the values that we're espousing and the behaviors that we're trying to drive, and not lose sight of that long-term picture. Hoping that's provoked you and we get some questions towards the end. Thank you very much.